141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard and a massive night in the title race. Martin O'Neill takes his Celtic side to face Falkirk as they look to jump back up to second in the table. Leaders Hearts can extend their lead at the top of the table if they can beat St Mirren at Tynecastle, and Rangers make more moves in the transfer market with Tuur Romans joining and Andreas Skov-Olsen edging closer. I'm Andrew McLean. Joining me in the studio are Jim Duffy and Cammy Bell, and I'm looking forward to these games tonight, Cammy.
Yeah, some cracking games tonight. Really significant night in Scottish football, I feel, for the league. Certainly when you look at the games, Celtic obviously a brilliant result at the weekend, but they need to back it up with a hard game at Falkirk. We all know that Falkirk have been very good this season, and yeah, Hearts at the weekend get over the line in a big win, that huge save from Craig Gordon, and they've now got a home game against struggling St Mirren. But we've all seen it, St Mirren can go to these places and get results, so it's a difficult game for them as well.
Might only be January, Jim, but there's pressure on both Celtic and Hearts tonight to make sure they get results with the way the league table's looking.
Well, that's not going to change now for the next several months, Andrew, because, you know, we're always complaining in Scotland we don't get a title race. Well, this year we have it. Currently get three teams vying for it. Hearts being in pole position, and, you know, they want to strengthen that position by a victory tonight. As Cammy mentioned then, that wonder save from Craig Gordon at the weekend, giving them all 3 points at Dundee. And they would expect, and I think their fans would expect them to beat St Mirren, but St Mirren are capable on their days. We saw just not that long ago in the cup final of producing a top class performance, and surprisingly they've been way off it, you know, which, I mean, I think everyone thought that they would be pushing for a top six again this year, but they've seemed to struggle in recent weeks. So I think Stevie Robinson, you know, will definitely be getting his team organised, his team fighting. I think this will be a tough match tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if St Mirren went there and took something from the game. Celtic away to Falkirk. Falkirk, another fantastic season under John McGlynn. At home, Falkirk's name, it'll be really, really tough for Celtic. Obviously, the artificial pitch. But Celtic, on the back of that comprehensive victory at the weekend, should be getting that game really buoyant. Although I think from a lot of Celtic fans that we've heard from are still really disappointed. They haven't made any significant signings so far. We know it's midway through the transfer window, but I think everyone expected on the debacle that happened in the summer that Celtic would be really busy in the high activity in the transfer business, and that hasn't happened so far.
Yeah, I wonder if that frustration from Celtic supporters at the lack of activity maybe heightened at the fact that they're watching on Rangers making another signing today in Tuur Romans, and it looks as if Andreas Skov-Olsen, the Danish winger who I think's got about 40 caps for Denmark, looks as if he's going to be next in the door as well.
Yeah, there'll be certainly a huge level of frustration from Celtic fans, and a lot of questions out there of why they've not made any moves yet. And you look at, obviously, Rangers, as you say, another two bodies in, another two good certain prospects that look as if they'll come in and certainly do a job for Rangers and bring something to the team. So, yeah, listen, I'm very, very surprised that Celtic haven't got a striker in the door. I'm amazed that there's not been that many rumours kicking about that they've got somebody lined up to come in the next 2 or 3 days. So it's just been incredible.
Well, let's hear from you. 01419511025. Two big games to build up to. So the usual questions: are you going to the game? How confident are you or otherwise about the results tonight? Who should start in those matches? Who shouldn't start from a Celtic perspective? Celtic fans, are you more confident at the fact that it is Martin O'Neill back in charge with that win at the weekend? Falkirk fans, how confident are you just given the good form you're in and the magic work that John McGlynn has done so far this season? Want to hear from you Hearts fans as well, because it was a big win, wasn't it, against Dundee at the weekend. Will that be backed up tonight? Can Craig Gordon play his way into being a starting goalkeeper now that he should be in from the start tonight? St Mirren fans as well, what is going wrong in the league after that historic League Cup win? Are you concerned at the moment with the way the league results are going, or maybe your interest is in transfers? Rangers fans, Tuur Romans has signed for a fee of about £3.5 million. Are you delighted with that signing? What about Andreas Skov-Olsen, who seems to be coming with a bit of pedigree on a loan to buy deal? And Celtic fans, Jim Duffy mentioned it, are there those frustrated feelings there that there doesn't seem to be many rumours about the next striker that is going to come in and take that number 9 position? 01419511025. Get your calls in while we go to the Falkirk Stadium with Gabriel Antoniazzi, who's building up to Falkirk against Celtic.
Yes, Andrew, good evening. And as the boys in the studio have said, what a significant night this could prove to be in the title race. Three teams who all believe they can win the league this season, starting with Celtic, playing catch-up under the reinstated Martin O'Neill. They're trying to draw level on points with Rangers in second place, whilst Hearts, just over in Edinburgh, will try and re-establish their six-point advantage at the top. Danny Rule's men will be watching eagerly from home, as will thousands of others across the country, as we look set for the best title race in years. Now, it's not to be underestimated what a huge test this is for O'Neill and his staff. Yes, they have won 8 out of their 9 matches this campaign across the two spells, getting straight back into it with the demolition of Dundee United last weekend. But they face one of the in-form teams in the league, John McGlynn's Falkirk. One of the many surprise packages this campaign, won 3 of their last 4, only lost 2 games at home all season. They're in the top half of the table, just 3 places below Celtic. Who would have thought that would be the case come January? O'Neill's first game back was against Falkirk, incidentally at Parkhead, a comfortable 4-0 win, but do not expect it to be so straightforward today. This stadium is a very different prospect. The referee will be John Beaton, the VAR Grant Irvin. Kickoff is at 7:45, so I'll bring you team news when it comes around 6:30.
Well, let's hear from you. What are you making of that game tonight? 01419511025. Chris is a Celtic fan up first. Chris, first of all, on the game, how confident are you feeling about getting a result tonight with Martin O'Neill back in the dugout?
I'm pretty confident. Not on Falkirk. They're a good, you know, they try and play a brand of football which is entertaining. But I just think Celtic will be too strong, especially under Martin O'Neill. He'll not let the standards drop. You know, Martin O'Neill has got standards. He knows what it's about. His backroom team know what it's about. They'll not let the standards drop.
It's amazing, isn't it, that if this game happened 2 weeks ago, I'm just imagining how different Chris's confidence levels and how different this call would be. And it's really just a testament to how quickly Martin O'Neill managed to get his side back, sort of clicking in his image on Saturday.
Yeah, also they put players in positions where the players felt comfortable in. You know, they felt they had a knowledge of how to play, a structure which they felt you know, they could pose on the United problems, which they certainly did. And I think that was, you know, it wasn't you know, overly complicated things. And Martin's never been the kind of manager overcomplicated. He just gives guys he trusts the guys. He puts in the positions and says, right, go, and you're good enough to go and do that job. And he just gives them a platform to play from, and they've done that. But I don't think it's just quite as straightforward as tonight, saying, well, you know, Martin will expect standards, because Falkirk have got standards as well under John McGlynn, and they've been very, very high over the last 4 years. And you know, they will be getting into this game, I think, buoyant, confident, more confident, particularly at home. Now, we mentioned the sacrificial suffers, but in generally speaking, even just listening to Gabriel there on the, you know, the chat, you can hear the wind in the background. It's quite an open stadium. It can be a swirling conditions there, so conditions might play a part in it. But I think that Celtic are going to have to be, you know, right at the top of their game to get a result tonight. I think any kind of victory, even a one goal margin, would be a terrific result. Because I do think that Falkirk will make this a really competitive game tonight.
Yeah, hard not to be impressed by, you know, the position that Falkirk have got themselves into at this stage of the season, but the way John McGlynn has gone about it as well.
Yeah, it's just been incredible since John McGlynn came into the club, to be perfectly honest. I think he's really has built something. There's a lot of them players that were playing League One not so long ago. They've now managed to take the step up. I think he's brought a lot of unity to Falkirk. The fans have invested in it. The board's invested in it. The players are invested in it. So, yeah, listen, there's a lot to like about Falkirk. I think they've went about their business really well. They've, again, not changed the squad too much. I think everyone looked at them at the start of the season and thought they were probably going to be a little bit short. But then when you've never gave these opportunity to these guys, Brad Spencer, for me, I think he's been absolutely fantastic. Again, you look at centre mids within the top flight this season. For me, Brad Spencer's up there with one of the best performers so far. So, yeah, I think these guys have really excelled and managed to get to the levels they've had to. And this is a huge challenge for Celtic tonight. I think Saturday was a good game for Celtic to face. Dundee United, again, they've not been at it. It was at home. Yes, Celtic had to take full advantage, and they were very, very good within that. But tonight's a real test for Martin O'Neill as well.
Chris, it was another pretty quiet day on the transfer front for Celtic. Not too much in the way of rumours about incomings. Is that a concern for you at the stage we're at in the window?
Very much so. I mean, as I said, we're 14 days now into January. And it's very clear we need a commanding centre-back, a creative midfielder, and the most important thing we need is a goal scorer. Now, Hibs have put a £6 million price tag on Kieran Bowie. Whether or not that's too much or whatever remains to be seen. But I don't see why we don't take a chance. I think Kieran Bowie's a proven goal scorer. If he comes to Celtic, he'll get European exposure, he'll win trophies, he'll get national team recognition. I mean, I know he's already been in the national team, but he'll get national team recognition and he'll be in the shop window because we're a global brand. By the time it comes for us to potentially sell Kieran Bowie, we will make still a healthy profit. I don't think it's rocket science to go to Hibs and say, there's your £6 million that you want for Kieran Bowie, add a 10% sell-on clause for any future transfers, and we go and get Kieran Bowie. He's a proven goal scorer. It's not rocket science.
I think Celtic would love it if it was as easy as that, yeah. As they could just take a £6 million gamble, or not even a gamble, as Chris is saying, and essentially just say, oh, it's fine, he'll come in, he'll score goals, we'll flip him for profit, and that's fine. Unfortunately for Celtic, that's not the way that football works. It isn't that simple, but can you see why Kieran Bowie is being touted as a potential Celtic striker?
Yeah, I mean, again, he's a boy who's still learning the game. You know, he's in the early stages. He's first team career. He has done well. Chris is saying that he's a proven goal scorer. I don't think he's a proven goal scorer
he's
yet.
He's only got 15 and 50 games. Yeah, for Hibs, that's what I'm saying.
But I think he's got potential, and you know, Hibs can set whatever valuation they want. He's a Hibs player. Now, whether Celtic go in and go after him and put their valuation on it and try to get it, I know what happened a few years ago with John McGinn, and that fell through because Celtic wouldn't give them the market, well, the value that Hibs valued them at, and that stuck in a lot of throats of a lot of Celtic fans, and it's obviously you see John's career how significant that could have been. So Kieran Bowie for me is definitely one I think Celtic should be looking at. Whatever value, let's split the difference here. Let's just say 5 million. If you go in and you pay, you might say, well, you're paying well over the odds, but at 21 or 22 years of age, whatever it is,
23,
he's got that potential to double that value if he goes and scores the goals that Chris believes he can do at Celtic. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And plus Celtic need another striker, so he may well be a complement of strikers, but at this moment in time Celtic only have Johnny Kenny, who's the only actual striker. Maeda's not an actual striker, so they need to get someone in through the door, and they will have to probably pay over the odds. That's just a simple fact of the market they're in. So why not take less of a risk going for a player who knows the Scottish game, knows what what Celtic's about, has got real physical presence, yep. Would give you a different dynamic. And I think he's definitely somebody that Celtic should be seriously considering.
I was going to say that, Jim. I think Celtic will end up paying £5 million for a player, £6 million for a striker to come in, no matter where they shop. They'll probably end up looking in Europe. I think when you look in Europe, especially for younger guys, to which they'll want somebody of the age bracket between probably 21 and 24. They'll not really want anybody further than that, or they'll be probably looking at a higher price bracket. I think when you look at Kieran Bowie at 23, yes, he's not a proven goal scorer, but I think he's got huge potential. He's a Scotland internationalist. I think his career's only going to excel and go forward. So for me, I think looking at him and the profile of, if you say, Jim, they could get him for 5 million, I think that would be a really good signing.
Well, thank you to Chris. What about Stephen in Springboig? Stephen, what are you making of Celtic's, I was going to say transfer activity, but maybe lack of transfer activity so far in the window?
It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. It really is. They're the richest team in the league with 75 or 85 million sitting in the bank. It's unbelievable. They've went nearly a full year without a striker. Young Johnny Kenny should be scoring 3 or 4 goals every single game, and he keeps missing. He was scoring one every 5 or 6 games or whatever. That boy is not the answer. They need to go and spend money on something half decent. It's unbelievable. I don't care. See, he's a 33-year-old. Go and spend some money on him. And then whoever the new manager is going to come in might say, I will keep him, or we won't keep him, and then bring in his own players. But I just don't understand what this board are doing. It's pathetic. Nope. I just need my ticket up
for the same reason. They're just using the fans at every opportunity. It's unbelievable. I really don't understand them.
There was something that Martin O'Neill said yesterday in his press conference, and he said that the loan market is something that Celtic might need to explore. Do you think that is maybe more likely in this window, where Celtic have an interim management team in? And yes, you know, Sean Maloney, Martin O'Neill are the ones that are going to be making decisions on players, but if the Celtic board aren't expecting Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney to be the management team beyond the summer, does it make it more complicated to then go out and spend £5-6 million on a striker that the next manager might not actually be interested in?
No, I don't think so. I think in football, you have to deal with the season that you're currently involved in. You have to deal with this year. Celtic's got a title to fight for. They can't think, oh, well, in 3 years' time, if we, you know, we have another manager, or 6 months' time, it doesn't matter. They have to get a top quality player, or is the best availability, or the best player available, sorry, at this moment in time. And you know, again, Stephen's saying there, Celtic's got plenty of money, but it doesn't mean you just throw it about, but they look as if they're not spending any. And again, it's the fact is they've had more than a year now since Kyogo left. They didn't sign anyone in the summer, so I mean, it's their recruitment side of it. And, you know, that side of it has been unbelievably poor. You have to say that. They should have had players ready. You know, whether it's a loan signing, whether it's a permanent signing, they should have had someone in. And I feel a bit sorry for Johnny Kenny, because Johnny Kenny gets getting a lot of criticism. Johnny Kenny's the only striker they've got there. You know, so, yeah, maybe he's not quite at the level yet, but he needs support, needs help. He's a boy that should be coming off the bench and maybe playing the last 20 minutes or so, and maybe if Celtic are ahead of the game, it takes the pressure off him, all these sort of things. He needs support, and he's not the guy that should have the weight of being a Celtic striker on his shoulders. That's unfair on him, but and sadly he's had to carry that mantle.
Stephen, do you have any confidence that Celtic will be able to get the business done that you're hoping they'll do before the end of the month?
No, none whatsoever, because they're all hopeless, every one of them on that board are absolutely hopeless. And if Martin O'Neill makes his mind up and says, no, what, you're not treating me the way you've treated every other manager in the past 2 or 3 years, and walks away, what are they going to do then?
I think that's the last thing that the Celtic season needs is Martin O'Neill then walking out on the club.
It's all down to them and them only. Dermot Desmond especially. It should start for him, for the very top, walking away, and let somebody else take it there.
I think one thing that obviously Stephen might not have confidence in the Celtic board to get it right is there's not the evidence there from the last couple of transfer windows that Celtic were getting it right in those either. Sold key players in January, didn't replace them, yep. Then left it late in the summer window, didn't end up getting the striker that they were looking for, brought in Kelechi Iheanacho on a free transfer, you know, Michelangelo Balakwisha coming in who hasn't made an impact. So you can see why that worry is there from Celtic supporters.
Yeah, listen, there's been failures. There's no getting away from that in the past sort of 3-4 transfer windows, if you go back as far as that. And also, to top that, you're obviously selling your best players as well, so they're leaving the club and you're not replacing them with players that are coming. And again, they've signed players, but they've not hit the heights that they were expecting to. Again, the recruitment's, it's not been right. They've got it wrong. There's no getting away from that. They've made mistakes within the recruitment. But again, they've moved on Paul Tisdale, so he's moved away from the club. So has that changed the whole dynamic of the players they were going to bring in January? And Martin O'Neill has maybe had his say and says, look, well, let's hold it a second, because them players that you were going to bring in don't suit me between now and the end of the season. But there's no getting away from it. They need a striker in the door. They need it quickly. And I'm pretty sure Martin O'Neill behind the scenes will be demanding that as well.
See, the thing is, Gimme, I think regardless of which system you played, they needed a centre-forward. Yeah, so whether it was Wilfred Nancy, he still played with a centre-forward. It was a 3-4-3, but he needed an out-and-out centre-forward. Martin O'Neill, whether he plays 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, whatever happens to be 3-5-2, he needs a centre-forward. So it didn't matter which manager was in charge. Celtic needed an absolute striker. And as the guys have said earlier on, it's Chris or Stephen, they needed a centre-back because Carter Vickers was going to be out for most of the season. So there are key positions, regardless of the system you played, that they needed to bring in. And so far, that you know that hasn't happened. So regardless of the manager, I think Celtic, as I said, should have been way down the line of making sure that those players, now whether as I said he gives two or three options to Martin O'Neill, doesn't fancy any of them, that's a different argument entirely.
He has said that he's essentially rejected a few options. He's had a few put down in front of him and rejected them.
And again, is that down to the ex sporting director of football, whatever you want to name Paul Tisdale as, his difference of opinion in player that he was wanting to bring into the club, and Martin O'Neill went, whoa, no, they're not for me. And again, we've seen a lot of failures that he has brought into the club, so I wouldn't say success rate was very good. I wouldn't say that at all. So I think that's why he's been moved on from the club. And again, it might just have been the first week or so that Martin O'Neill was getting presented players that he didn't want and he didn't think was going to impact and improve his team.
Well, thank you to Stephen. 0141 951 1025. We'll take more of your calls next.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Two big games at the top of the table tonight. Falkirk against Celtic at the Falkirk Stadium. We've got team news from there shortly, and the same at Tynecastle between Hearts against St Mirren. Some transfer news today as well. Rangers have completed the signing of left back Tuur Romans on a 3.5 year deal. They also look close to signing Andreas Skov Olsen, the Danish international winger, on a loan to buy deal. Cammy, since we've got you in, goalkeeper, got to talk about it. Yeah. I don't think we've had your opinion on it yet.
No.
Craig Gordon's save at the weekend.
Yeah, listen, just incredible. Really is incredible. I'm not even going to mention his age. I just actually got to speak about the save. I think when you look at the actual technique of the save and what he has to do, the speed of the ball coming off the surface, going right in the corner, it's actually behind him and he has to claw it out. The reaction time is just so small for Craigie to get his hand out there and make that save. Just incredible when you watch it back. And again, I really don't want to mention his age, because I watch Craig Gordon, I have done for years, I've worked with him. I'm not saying I expect saves like that, but I've seen them throughout his whole career. The one back in Sunderland, do you remember that one that they spoke about for years?
One, voted the best save in the Premier.
And again, so I've seen him do it time and time again, but that was special. That was really, really special. From a goalkeeper's point of view, I think I appreciate how hard that save was. Full stretch. And it was so important as well. I think it really was a significant save in that game for Hearts' season as well.
With Schvolo out, suspended, Craig Gordon will no doubt come back in tonight. Do you think there is an avenue that he could establish himself as the number one for the rest of the season, or is Hearts' form with Schvolo in goal been so good that you reckon he'll probably just come back in after his suspension's over?
It's a headache for Derek McInnes.
Good problem to have.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. But again, I think if Craigie does well, then I think he's been training really well from what I've heard. Speaking to people at Hearts, he's been working hard. He wants to be number one. He's desperate to be number one. He's produced a big save. He looked comfortable within the game before that. If he has a good game tonight, then why wouldn't he continue in goals? So, and again, he might... I think he will continue. I really do.
Yeah.
I think if he has a good game tonight, then why would you swap him with the team?
See next week if he does, if he's going to play tonight. If he doesn't play at the weekend or next week when he's due back in again, then half the teams in the league should all be absolutely knocking on it, rattling Derek McInnes.
I think that one is dead in the water.
I understand he said that, but listen, football can change. If the player is unhappy, I mean, Craig Gordon's not said anything, but if Craig, as Cammy said, goes in tonight, puts another clean sheet for Tonk's sake, and then he realises he's not going to be picked, then Craig might then be the one that says, listen, I know you're not happy about it, Gafford, but I want to go and play a World Cup year, and therefore, and sometimes players can manoeuvre the move.
At the weekend as well, would he have been playing anyways? Because would he have been given the cup games? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
that's a good point.
Again, so then that almost plays into Craig's favour with regards to basically getting almost three games in a row. If he can keep a clean sheet tonight, do the same at the weekend.
But that's what I'm saying. If he then is left out, 100%. That's a statement that the manager believes that Charlo's number one.
Yeah.
And therefore, Craig, then you've been a goalkeeper, you know yourself, he might then turn around and say, well, listen, I've been sensational for three games, yep, maybe three good results, and I'm still not in the mind. I want to play. And he might, as I said, look at this and say, well, and there'd be a number of clubs still want to take him, regardless of how old he is.
I said on Saturday, before he made this save, that he'll play at the World Cup regardless. Regardless of what happens with Angus Gunn, regardless whether he plays any games between now and the end of the season, Craig Gordon will be Scotland's number one.
Well, maybe you've got some thoughts on that. 01419511025. We're going to speak to Gus, who's a Celtic fan, on the line. But let's go to the Falkirk Stadium. Some breaking team news. Gabriel Antoniazzi.
Yeah, just one change for Celtic and Martin O'Neill this evening. Benjamin Negrin comes in for Reo Itati in midfield, with the Japanese dropping to the bench. So it will be Kasper Schmeichel in goal, a defence of Julian Araujo, Austin Trusty, Liam Scales and Kieran Tierney. Arne Engels, Callum McGregor and Benjamin Negrin are the midfield three. Yang and Seb Tunecti out wide, with Dyson Maeda playing through the middle once more. Substitutes, Sinisalo, Hatate, McCowan, Kenny, Bernardo, Murray, Forrest, Donovan and Ralston.
As I said, Gus is a Celtic fan in Inverkip. First of all, Gus, I'm putting this one on you very quickly. The team out, not too many surprises. Are you happy with that for tonight?
No, I think it's a strong enough team to do the business and move on to the next game. There's no surprises in there. A steady team, 3 points and move on to the next game.
Yeah, not too many changes, really, just having a look. Benjamin Negrin in from the start. He was someone who wasn't overly favoured from the start by Martin O'Neill in his first spell, came off the bench and scored on the weekend. Sort of follows a pattern where you're maybe not going to get an outstanding 90-minute performance, but hard to leave out because of his goal record this season.
Yeah, I mean, his goal return is very good, you know, considering that Celtic have been very inconsistent. And you know, his goal return from midfield, you can't argue with that. You know, maybe sometimes, and he's missed a few as well, he's got into good position. So, you know, he's been a threat. Hatate's been hot and cold this year. Actually, he's probably played his best football under Martin O'Neill, but he struggled with the system that Wilfred Nancy, as a number of players did. And he certainly struggled, but he's certainly not reached anywhere near the heights, Hatate, I think, this year, than he did in the previous season. So yeah, I mean, it's just one change. I didn't really envisage too many changes. I don't think the back four was ever going to change, and I think that the front three would be the same. So that was really the only one. Maybe Engels, he could have maybe looked at that situation, put Hatate alongside McGregor. But no, he's went with Negrin. So he's got that threat, he's got that timing coming into the box. You know, Martin O'Neill's not going to make wholesale changes for the sake of it. He knows how difficult it's going to be and how important it's going to be, because I say that there's not a lot of margin for error for Celtic.
Gus, what else is on your mind from a Celtic perspective? Is it the title race? Is it the transfer window?
Speaking of transfer, this is a kind of smoke and mirrors, no smoke without fire kind of thing. Obviously, Nicholas Kuhn has been told to up his game in training, face an uncertain future. Como, the left-footed right winger, the revelation his second season, with the hoops in the end, a £17 million move. Now, obviously, this story's not coming out. I've read it quite a few forums that they're obviously not happy with him. Is that then telling the rest of the world that they want to buy him? So I think Celtic, if they wanted to, I know it's the same old story, don't buy your old players back, but Nicholas Kuhn was an exception. And I reckon if they offered half of £17 million, they'll get him back.
If the Como manager, Cesc Fabregas, isn't it, if he's coming out and saying to Nicholas Kuhn that he's not doing the business in training, is that the type of player you want back? I know he was very good at Celtic and, you know, did enough to warrant that £17 million move away, but is that the type of player that, say, he hadn't previously been linked to Celtic? Is that something that you would want into the club?
I think he proved it, obviously, in his latter season. But I think he could do a job for Celtic if he was bought at the right price. And I mean, Celtic are struggling just now, and a left-footed right winger might be the answer.
I mean, everyone else is coming back, so Nicholas Kuhn, could you see it?
We could probably get a top 11 back.
Listen, I would imagine it would all depend on the price. Listen, Celtic, I thought, got a fantastic deal for him, a lot of money. Yes, he was in really good form at that point for Celtic. He had the period where he first came in, and I know he had was it an illness or something when he first came into the club?
Yeah, he had to get an operation on his teeth.
Yeah, so it was his teeth. So that disrupted him for the first sort of 3-4 months. And then when he came back into pre-season, he was absolutely flying. And he was very good for Celtic, very efficient, created a lot of goals, scored goals. I think it would just be down to the price tag. Would Celtic take him back? Probably would at this moment in time, but as I say, would they have to pay over the odds? Probably, because I mean, he went for a lot of money, so you'd expect his parent club to want that sort of, try and recoup as much as he could.
Also, his salary levels, you know, be really high, but I personally wouldn't go down there. I think he had a purple patch. I think he had a few months. He struggled to start. He then had that purple patch, but before he left, I think he'd been off the boil again. So I don't think it would be. I mean, Celtic's already signed Jota, who they've been before, Kieran Tierney. There's talk about Keogh coming back. Martin O'Neill's back his third time. Brendan Rodgers has been back twice. I think that we keep saying all the time, if your recruitment is only going back, I mean, there was talk earlier on about Matt O'Reilly coming back a while back.
I think fans would probably be more appreciative if there was a bit more imagination thinking.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. You know, Andrew, you've got to be looking about to fans get excited about new players coming, you know. I mean, given that, as I say, that lift to the team, I think dressing rooms need new players to come in. And you know, Celtic is a global club, should be.
Is it not a sign of how desperate Celtic are at the moment?
And fans as well, though. I think when they get back down the same road, I think, of course. Gus is perfectly entitled to want players. He maybe liked him as a player, as a big favourite. And all, I know he said he was excellent, but I just think that they've got to be getting better. And the current two wingers they've got, I think Kuhn's better than Balakisha and in Tonetke and in Yang. I think he's better than him. I'm not denying that. And ultimately, but I still think they've got to be looking around and try to bring, I think, a different type of player to Celtic to try and enhance them. But key priorities would be, for me, goalkeeper, centre-back, centre-forward.
Well, thank you to Gus. What about Craig, who is a Rangers fan in Airdrie? Craig, are you happy with that second official signing of the window today?
All right, Andrew. All right, partner. How are you doing?
Thank
all right?
You. Good, thank you.
I am absolutely outstanding bit of business again with the club. Obviously, I'm just can't wait to get the announcement of Andrey Skovolsyn. I think that's
that a player that excites you? I've seen quite a few Rangers fans on social media looking forward to that one being announced potentially.
I've seen that he's had 40 caps with Denmark. I've seen him play for Club Brugge. He's going to really, really lighten up this league. That's a real statement, intent from the board. I'm absolutely buzzing with this signing.
Do you think that could be a big addition for Rangers in the second half of the window? So the last winger they got on loan from Wolfsburg was Václav Černý, who came in and scored plenty of goals. They'd be happy if he could make that type of impact.
Absolutely. Černý, I thought, was fantastic for Rangers. A difficult time as well for them. I felt as if when he came in, he brought something different to the team. You look at the calibre of the player that they're linked with now, and as you mentioned, a Danish internationalist with so many caps. I think Rangers' business has been really good. I think they've just went about it quite quietly. They've not made too many noises until they're actually coming out and announcing players have signed for the club. So I think Rangers fans will be excited about this January window, and I think Rangers, the position that they're in at the moment, the board understand there's a real opportunity at going and winning this title this year.
Yeah, Craig, it looks as if Danny Rule is going to be backed. There was obviously a lot of money spent in the summer. Looks as if the same could well be happening again this month with Chukwuanyi coming in, Tuor Romans coming in today. There'll be definitely, I think, a 7-figure loan outlay for Skovolsyn, a potential option to buy in the summer. Is that promising for you that, you know, Andrew Kavanagh is really sort of opening his wallet again in this window?
Andrew and Parag are actually putting their money where their mouth is. They're really serious businessmen. The only way for this club is up now. It's like we're in such a dominant place at the moment. We're playing really, really good football. Obviously, we've still got a few players out injured, obviously. They'll be hopefully back in the near future. There'll be a few outs before. But I heard a wee rumour the other day that the Scott Wilson deal, but that was about a £3.5 million loan fee. But obviously, we're talking maybe about, I'd say maybe Rangers could do a bit of business with like maybe between 8 to 10 million for Scott Wilson, because obviously he's not played a lot of football, but this boy is going to seriously bring Rangers to another level.
I won't lie, I don't know the exact figures. If Rangers were paying a £3.5 million loan fee for 6 months, I'd be very surprised. But I think it is a significant fee that Rangers
for
are
who
paying.
Andreas
Skov Olsen, who's going to be the Danish international that's set to come in on loan. But the way that Rangers' summer transfer window went, you could kind of see January going one of two ways. It could be more money being thrown at it to then try and correct some of the problems that were made in the summer, or it could have been, you know, the Rangers board maybe put off spending that money because it didn't work first time round. Well, I think we know what way it's going.
Yeah, but I think that's all credit to the Rangers board and the new Rangers owners. You know, they've realised that obviously Patrick Stewart and Kevin Taylor were both lost their job because they didn't think that side it was good enough. But rather than sit back and just kind of go with the mistakes, they've then said, okay, we need to build. We've got some good points. Some players have improved, like Chermiti, for instance. Gassama has been a good signing. Obviously, Mikey Moore's come, you know, the loan side, it looks is a positive signing. So there has been, you know, real improvement in Rangers. The results, of course, breed confidence, put a bit more belief within the supporters. And even if it's not going to be absolutely perfect this season, and listen, they could well, I'm not saying that Rangers couldn't, they'll win the fight, and they are in the fight for the title, but if it didn't work out, they've got a real strong base to work from. It's not, you know, they don't need to dismantle everything in the summer, which they've had to do over the last couple of summers, so they maybe just need to tweak it, and it's obviously shown that the owners are prepared to invest, and those players, as you mentioned there, look real positive signings. But they've got to adapt to the Scottish football game. We saw Ant-Man come in his first game. He looked like a star, and since then, he just has struggled. So some players click. Doesn't matter if they've got 40 caps or no caps, and other ones struggle a little bit. So let's hope from the point of view that Craig's saying there, that these players hit the ground running, because Rangers do have some injury problems, but they haven't been slow in their work. And I think a lot of Celtic fans will be, you know, a wee bit envious of the fact that Rangers have been out and doing some significant business in the early part of the January transfer window.
Well, thank you to Craig. More of your calls to come. I'll tell you about this first though.
Grade one.
Well, imagine looking at your bank account and seeing £275,000 in there for your chance to get the call and bag the cash on Friday. Get your entry in for the draw right now. Text YES to 61025, text or 250, plus your standard network rate. You can enter at makemeawinner.co.uk, where you'll also find the rules for this network competition, or you can call 03434 269 340. Calls are charged at the standard rate. It's over 18s only. Lines close at 5 o'clock on Friday. All you need to do to get the money, if you get the call, is answer your phone. Simple as that, and you'll win £275,000, and it'll be paid straight into your bank account right after the call. So for your chance to win, text YES to 61025 now.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Jim Duffy and Cammy Bell with me, Andrew McLean, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Still plenty of time to get your calls in. 0141 951 1025. Two big games to look forward to: Falkirk against Celtic and Hearts against St Mirren at Tynecastle. We'll go there very shortly to get the team news, but let's go back to the Falkirk Stadium just to get that Falkirk team from Gabriel.
Yeah, one change for Falkirk as well, Andrew. Kirill Wilson in for Henry Cartwright, who's amongst the substitutes. So the team is as follows: Scott Bain in goal, a defence of Philip Lisser, Connor Allen, Liam Henderson and Leon McCann, Brad Spencer, Dylan Tate and Kirill Wilson in midfield, with Finn Yates, Calvin Miller and Barney Stewart up top. Substitutes: Hogarth, Adams, Donaldson, Graham, Cartwright, Ross, Williams, Parkinson and Marsh.
And a big game, as I mentioned, at Tynecastle, Hearts against St Mirren. Can Hearts extend their lead again at the top of the table? There for us is former Aberdeen and Hibs striker Steve Cowan.
Hello, Andrew. How are you doing?
Oh, good, thank you. You, Steve?
Yeah, good, thank you very much. Yeah, another big match here for both clubs, as you say, with different ambitions at this stage of the season. For Hearts, on the back of what Derek McInnes said could be the biggest 3 points of the season with his win over Dundee at the weekend. As he described it, as digging out a win and seeing another side of his team in their pursuit for the league title. And of course, a big hand from goalkeeper Craig Gordon with that world-class save he made near the end of the game to ensure all 3 points. So Dean McInnes makes four changes to the team that beat Dundee 1-0 at the weekend. Craig Gordon retains his place in goal after coming on for Alexander Sholo, who was red-carded against the Dundee. Also coming in is Milne and Spittle for Magnussen and McCart, and Steinwinder for Altena. So they go with Gordon in goals, Steinwinder, Halkett, Finlay and Milne as a back four. Two midfielders sitting in front of him is Beningame and Devlin, and then you've got Spittle, Braga, Kiriadis and Shanklin. On the bench for Hearts is Fulton, Kent, McCart, Kabangu, Kabore, Magnussen, Altena, Kiryota and Chesnikov. And over to St Mirren. Well, they've had a really terrible run recently, lost the last three games, and Stephen Robertson described his team as in a relegation battle, and they really are, and they have to start picking up points if they want to stay away from that bottom two. So he's made three changes to the team. He lost 2-0 to Falkirk on Saturday. Out goes Ilindulu, Donnelly and Taylor, and in comes Idobo, Smith and Goggis. So they go with George in goals, a back three of Fraser, King and Freckleton, midfield five of McMenamin, Phillips, Goggis, Smith and John, and Mandron and Adubi up front. The St Mirren subs tonight are Mullen, Richardson, Tanzer, Ilindulu, Campbell, Deeksdale, Sobowale, Taylor and Mooney. And the match referee is Kevin Clancy, and Stephen McLean's on VAR.
Yeah, one thing I was interested in the build-up to this game, Steve, is that it seemed quite deliberate from Dean McInnes that, you know, it was put on the club's socials that he was really sort of playing to fans that they need all the help they can get. He says, you know, fans realise by now that any sort of interaction, positivity towards the team, any extra noise can help them. It almost sounds like a manager who realises that the expectations are changing, the expectations of fans are changing, and he maybe just wants to keep, you know, positivity instead of pressure as we go into the next few months of this title race.
I think you're absolutely right, Andrew, and you know, you've been to Tynecastle many times, like myself and the guys in the studio. It's a fantastic place when it's full, when it's bouncing, and even if you look at the support of the weekend, you know, fully, all the tickets for the weekend were sold out, the fans are on side, and there is that, I suppose, from a fan's point of view, this expectation that we can go in and win the league now, and why not? I mean, they're top of the league, they're, you know, they're doing really well, and even when they're not winning or playing well and winning games, they're grinding them out. So, yeah, I think there is expectation, but the positivity around the place is brilliant.
Well, thank you to Steve. We'll go back to Tynecastle before kick-off. We've got Chris on the line, who's a Hearts fan in Livingston. Chris, are you feeling good about tonight's game? Feeling confident?
Aye, definitely, aye. I'm buzzing for the game, like, tonight. The position that we're in now, like, we couldn't have dreamed of being in this at the start of the season. Like, whatever happens, like, I couldn't be prouder of the team. I just wanted to make the point tonight that we have to play, like, a lot better tonight than what we have been the last few games, eh? I know the second half performance against Dundee was phenomenal, and, like, they deserve every credit for that with 10 men. Like, that amazing save at the end, it was brilliant. I just feel, though, it's kind of been forgotten, like, the first half performance. Like, it was truly awful, if I'm honest, like, and the second half against Livy in the last game before that, that wasn't up to scratch either. And, like, we all know, obviously, against Hibs, we never started playing in that game until the last 15 minutes. So it is just a bit worrying, like, when you're, like, talking about going for the league title. I really just want us to go out there tonight and blow them away so we can actually sit back, relax, enjoy, like, watching this amazing team and, like, not have our nerves fried, like, as the time goes on. Like, I get it's a lot of games and you're never going to be at your best every game, eh? But I really just want a confident shot tonight from the boys, eh?
I wonder if that's maybe kind of what Dean McInnes is touching on, because in any other season where Hearts aren't sitting top of the table and they're on a run of 5 wins from 6 games, I don't think you really hear too much about, you know, the way they're winning games, whereas now people maybe don't want that extra pressure on top of things, getting late into games and wondering whether they're going to concede a goal, because there is just more at stake at the moment for Hearts than there has been previously.
Yeah, and we mentioned it before, expectations get higher as you sit top of the league for such a long period as well, the expectation of the fans. And I think the message is a clever one from Dean McInnes. He's making sure that the fans know that, listen, get behind the team because they will need you at moments. As Chris mentioned there, when you look back at the games recently, there's been a lot of sticky performances. There's been a lot of, you look back at the Edinburgh Derby, it wasn't good for long spells in that game for Hearts. Yes, they did make a fight of it towards the end of it. But then there's been other games, Livingston, you probably expected them to go and blow them away. They didn't do that. The fans were a little bit frustrated in that game. Dundee, again, first half were poor. They still get that lead from Braga's early goal. And then they have to hang on because they go down to 10 men. But what I would say is, it's still a measure of how good this Hearts team is. The Hearts aren't playing well at this moment in time, and they're still winning games of football. You need to do that when you want to win titles. You need to win games when you're not playing well. Find a way to win. Your goalkeeper make a massive save at the end of the game. Craig Gordon done that. They defended ever so well as well for long periods. So I think, listen, you can look at either way. Yes, the fans will want to flip it and be on top and win 3-0 tonight. Of course they will. That's what they want to see. They want to see them getting back to their best. But I think what it's done in the last few weeks for the squad, I would believe if I was a player in that squad and I went through a little bit of nervousness, a little bit of backs against the wall in games, we can do it and we can still win games. So there'll be a belief that they can go and find ways to win differently. And I think you need that as a title contender.
Well, thank you to Chris. So 0141 951 1025. We'll take more of your calls in the second hour, and you need to get your calls in for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Your chance to take on either Jim Duffy or Cammy Bell. 0141 951 1025. Lines close at 7 o'clock.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Two big games at the top of the table tonight: Falkirk against Celtic and Hearts against St Mirren. We'll continue the build up to those matches, and we'll also keep looking at the transfer window. Some big news today for Rangers fans: a signing in left back Tuur Romans, who signed a 3.5 year deal. Looks as if Andreas Skov Olsen is going to be signing on a loan to buy deal as well. Quieter over the City at Celtic. We've had some Celtic fans giving their opinion on that. Maybe you want to add to those opinions. 0141 951 1025. Maybe you want to talk about the games tonight. That's absolutely fine as well. 0141 951 1025. And we're going to play this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Apparently the Pundits could get their 100th win of the season this week. So the pressure's on. It needs to be 3 wins from the next 3 to seal it this week. So it means that whoever plays out of yous 2 needs to win tonight for it to happen this week. I don't know if that adds any jeopardy whatsoever. I imagine not at all. But it's nice to mention, isn't it? Right, it's going to be Jack in Motherwell that's going to play. Jack, have you played before?
I've played a few times.
How have you got on?
I've been beat by Cammy Bell, if that makes a difference.
Oh jeez, Jack, you must be struggling, pal.
So what's the plan tonight? Is it rematch with Cammy Bell, or do you want to face Jim Duffy?
I will go for a rematch.
Right, we'll see. It will be the blue side of the Beat the Pundit coin for Cammy Bell. It'll be the red side for Jim Duffy. And it is the blue side. You get your wish. It's going to be a rematch with Cammy Bell. So we'll put something else in the ear of Cammy Bell so he can't hear us. You know the rules by now, Jack, but I'll read them out again. It is 30. Apparently you played in the very first game of this season. Is that right, Jack?
No, I've not played this season yet.
Oh, well, the information I'm getting is false. Oh, it's Cammy's first game this season. Right, we'll get that in. I'll say that to him afterwards. I can't believe that. He's not played this season. That's incredible. Right, anyway, 30 seconds on the clock to answer as many questions as you can. Remember, you can pass as well if that helps you. How's that?
Go for it.
Right, let's go. What was the score the last time Celtic played Falkirk?
2-0.
Which current Rangers player is on loan from Marseille?
Cornelius.
Who did Inverness beat on penalty in last night's Scottish Challenge Cup?
Partick Thistle.
Who won the Scottish Premiership Player of the Month for December?
Elliot Watt.
How many Scottish League titles did Henrik Larsson win as a player?
4.
Oscar Cortez has left Rangers on loan for a club in which country?
Argentina.
Right, we will bring Cammy Bell back in. Cammy, is it your first game of this season? Is that right?
Yeah, because I went to the Saturday show.
I've only
been in the studio midweek a couple of times.
That makes sense. One of the producers told me that and I couldn't quite believe it. So yeah. Your first pressure's on for you.
Real pressure.
Because you're either going to have a 100% record or you're going to have a 0% record.
Okay.
Your last game, I'm told, was in May 2025 and it was a 3-1 loss.
Just to
pile the extra pressure on. Right, 30 seconds on the clock. Let's do it. What was the score the last time Celtic played Falkirk?
4-0.
Which current Rangers player is on loan from Marseille?
Pass.
Who did Inverness beat on penalties in last night's Scottish Challenge Cup?
Partick Thistle.
Who won the Scottish Premiership Player of the Month for December?
Brass.
How many Scottish League titles did Henrik Larsson win as a player?
Five.
Oscar Cortez has left Rangers on loan for a club in which country?
Colombia. Not a clue.
Jack, how do you think that went?
I think I might have done him.
I like his confidence. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
I think he might have, to be fair.
What was the score the last time Celtic played Falkirk? Jack said 2-0. Cammy said 4-0. It was 4-0. So it goes 1-0 to Cammy Bell. Which current Rangers player is on loan from Marseille? You passed.
Cornelius.
Yeah. And Jack said Derek Cornelius. So it goes 1-0. Who did Inverness beat on penalties in last night's Scottish Challenge Cup? The answer was Partick Thistle. You both got it right. 2-2. Who won the Scottish Premiership Player of the Month for December? Did you freeze? You seem to just not say anything for ages.
Right. I don't know if they did win it. No, I'm not.
Go for it. Who were you going to say?
I was going to say Brad Spencer.
Oh, no. It wasn't. No. No.
Who was it?
Well, Jack went for Elliot Watt. And it was Elliot Watt. 3-2.
I've seen that today as well.
To Jack, how many Scottish League titles did Henrik Larsson win as a player? Cammy went for 5. Jack went for 4. It's 4. It's 4-2 to Jack. And you both got one final question in. Oscar Cortez has left Rangers on loan for a club in which country? You went for Colombia. He is, of course, Colombian. So it would make sense that you would go there. But he went to Argentina, and Jack said Argentina. Ooh. So it is a 5-2 win.
Well done, Jack.
For Jack. Congratulations. That
is a very
good effort from Jack. Is it one of the beat the pundit coins you're after, Jack, or is it the sign ball?
I mean, I've got 2 sign balls, so it'll need to be the coin.
There we go. We'll get him. Get him sent that. That was a convincing performance from Jack. Jack, who do you support?
Rangers.
How are you feeling about the latest bit of transfer business and transfer news today?
It's good. Hopefully we can get Scott Wilson over the line as well. I'd like another centre back in, I think, just for a bit of extra backup there. But overall,
Jack, you've got 4 centre backs or 5. How many do you want?
I know, but you can't trust John Souter with injuries.
Are you convinced by the other ones, Jack?
Fernandez and Salia, Cornelius.
Jigga worries me. Obviously, Cornelius is injured still. I think Fernandez is coming good. Sort of obviously got a good partnership at the back, but it's just whether you can keep sort of fit that's the issue.
I'm guessing by the tone of the questioning of you two that you don't think it's a high priority area for Danny Rowe in this window.
Well, I don't because I think you've got 5 centre backs, and I think if you get too many, I know you can't cover. I mean, you can see
James Tavernier shown he can fill in there.
Yeah,
at times,
I mean,
as
also
well.
Dujon Sterling. I know he's currently injured at this moment in time, but I just think if you get too many, you overload that area, and you know the Rangers have strengthened in the middle of the pitch because they've got injured here just now. I still believe if you're going to be trying anything, it's still in the top end of the pitch, which is the hardest part. We've seen that. I mean, Chermiti's improved. Mijovski's not quite, you know, hit the levels that you would maybe expected. So if there was one area, I would have thought that might have been an area that if you can improve, you'd look to improve.
Would you expect a striker to come in, Jack, or is it maybe tough just given the money that's been spent in that area over the last few windows and the players that still remain there and, you know, Chermiti and Mijovski and Danilo?
I mean, I'd love a striker, but I think you need to try and get Danilo at the door first, which I think is going to be the biggest problem with the money we spent on him. But I think if you could ship Danilo out to somewhere else, I think a striker would be a priority, preferably, obviously. Chermiti seems to be playing well, but he's still not scoring loads of goals. He got the 2 against Celtic, but I think if he could add a few goals to his game, he'd be getting on a lot better. His hold-up plays really well, but I just think we need a natural goal scorer in there.
You do wonder, with it looking as if Andreas Skov-Olsen is coming in, is that a sign that Rangers maybe aren't looking at the actual striking department and who is the person up front, but maybe the areas in where they can create more for the striker that's going to be playing in that position?
Yeah, possibly. I think Chermiti's game has improved. There's no getting away from that. I think his link-up play has been good the last few games. I don't think he's a striker that's going to get you the amount of goals that a Rangers number 9 is expected to get. So again, are they looking to, as you mentioned, bring in players to supplement with goals from other areas, possibly, because I think they've spent a lot of money on Chermiti. As we mentioned, they've got Danilo Miovski there. I think one of them has to leave the building before they get another striker in, because there's a lot of money at that front end of the pitch. So yeah, I think Chermiti's coming on to a game. He doesn't convince me that he's going to score a huge amount of goals, and that I think long term will be his problem.
You go along with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely improved. There's not any doubt about that. As Rangers as a whole have improved, I think they need more supply, but he has to be in between the sticks more often, has to gamble more often. His goal against Celtic, where he comes across the front post, you know, that type of goal, you know, he has to add more, you know, to his game. The kind of scrappy, scruffy goals, bundling ones in, second balls, all these kind of things. And I think if he adds that, then he'll certainly get a decent number of goals. But, you know, as Jack was saying there, it's difficult to find those type of players, and you do have to maybe move one out to create space. Guys like Asgard have still got to get up to speed as well. I think they can still offer a lot more in that creative sense. You know, like a Morelos type of striker, he's not that Chermiti. So I think he needs to, you know, yeah, keep improving, keep doing what he's doing, keep working hard, keep being a focal point for the team. And maybe Danny Rose looked at it and thought, well, if I can't, he's maybe not a natural goal scoring striker, so can we add goals from the wider areas? Can we add goals from midfield? And that's part of the reason why he's maybe looking at these other players.
Well, thank you to Jack. Another win on Beat the Pundit over Cammy Bell. You're going to be running scared.
Well, I beat him the last time you said.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he said he beat you.
No,
never mind.
Nice.
That's not as fun really for me.
But no, we can't get 100 wins this week.
Well, I forgot because we play on a Sunday as well.
And
I don't know why I forgot that, considering the fact that I do the Sunday show. But it can happen on a Sunday. It just needs to be a perfect record from the pundits from now until Sunday. Right, Bobby is a Rangers fan in Carluke. Bobby, what's your opinion on Rangers' transfer business? Are you happy at the amount that Rangers have done and look as if they're going to do, or is there more work to be done?
I think they're doing well with getting two players, quality players in every position, but I still think they're needing a centre-half. I don't trust John Souter. I think he's going to an error.
Yeah, because we talked about the number of central defenders that Rangers have on their books, but I suppose another question would be, you know, is Danny Rule satisfied with the quality of the number he's got in there? Maybe seems as if that is a yes, because there hasn't been too much in the way of rumours there. But if Rangers were to sign another central defender that is of the quality that Bobby's looking for, you'd imagine there would need to be some movement out the way, because just looking at Rangers' squad, as we mentioned, you know, James Tavernier can play in there. You've got John Souter, who's natural central defender. Derek Cornelius, who's coming back from injury. Clinton Nsiala, who hasn't really featured much. Dujon Sterling, Nasser Djiga as well, and Emmanuel Fernandez, who's been starting week in, week out. So there are plenty of options. The question is, are the options good enough to win a league title?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit surprised, Bobby, because I think John Souter's the best natural defender Rangers have. I don't think there's a better centre-back than him. I think he's the guy that, you know, I think he helps the other players as well. At times he's had to play in the left, which doesn't always suit him. I think when Cornelius came in, they looked a good balance there. But if Fernandez playing there, you know, then he goes in the right. But I'm surprised. But obviously, you know, Bobby's got his views on John Souter. I think he has had a few injury issues, but so is, you know, a number of players. But I think when he plays, he's Rangers' best defender. I think he gives them that security. He's better on the ball than a lot of the other players as well. So yeah, I'm a wee bit surprised. I don't think Rangers need another centre back. I don't think that's an area that they have to look at too much, because they've got enough strength and depth in there. It just depends on whether Bobby believes that they're good enough. He obviously doesn't fancy John Souter, but that's a wee bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah, Bobby, is that an area you feel could be, you know, potentially title defining? The Rangers have to strengthen in that area if they're going to win the title for you.
I feel like they need somebody definitely a lot better than John Souter. Can you see him leading winning a league title the rest of the season? I just can't see it happen.
I'm surprised a little bit at that. I understand some Rangers fans do think John Souter has a mistake in him. He likes to play then passes out from the back again through the lines that can get cut out and cause you problems, but again I think he's effective at doing it at times. You look at Rangers, they've only conceded 17 goals in the league. They've actually got a decent defensive record this season. So yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. I probably personally wouldn't have picked John Souter. I'm with Jim, probably I would have picked him as probably one of my strongest ones. Again, I'm probably a little bit unsure of De Gea and Fernandes. I think they're the ones that Fernandes, yes, he's improving. He's still, for me, got a mistake in him. I think he's young, he's learning the game, but when he's in possession, he holds on the ball too long, he can make the wrong decision. And I think as a centre-half, you're very, very vulnerable if you make them decisions, especially in the big games, when teams will get opportunities and they will take them, when these crunch games come against Celtic and Hearts and Motherwell in the up-and-coming months, that you need to be tight at the back. You can't afford to make mistakes. So I wouldn't have identified John Souter as the weakest one. I think long term, looking at that position, absolutely it's somewhere they will want to strengthen.
Bobby, I know a lot of Rangers fans are quite looking forward to the potential signing of Andreas Skov-Olsen. For you, if he is to come in, whose place in the team do you reckon he takes, assuming he is going in to be a starter?
If he's starting right wing every day of the week, Antman's there for cover, they know, but he's still to start playing. But centre back that's worrying me, Giga's no good enough, Cornelius is still coming back for an injury, Sterling's out injured still. What happens if John Souter gets down injured? I think the game's a bogey
if Rangers don't sign a
Again, you've got six, at least six, you mentioned there, players who can play in that position. You can't just keep constantly signing someone just in case something happens.
And with
somewhere
the options
else
that Rangers have, I know there are injuries, but with the options Rangers have, they've been picking up the most points in the league since Danny Rule came in, and also conceding fewer goals than most teams as well. So, you know, it's certainly an area that Danny Rule might seem a bit more comfortable in than other areas of the park.
You know, again, every team picks up injuries and you've got to have enough squad depth to cope with that. But in that particular area, I think Rangers do have enough squad depth. Now, whether the quality that Rangers fans want is another matter, but you can't have everybody a top player in every position. You know, sometimes you have to use squad players, sometimes you have to use players that are adaptable, a bit like Dujon Sterling. You know, so you know, I know he's injured, but you can have that James Tavernier is now moved in there at times. I just think that Rangers have a lot of players now, bringing in those new players as well. He said there that you know, if he's going to play wide in the right, Gassama could be playing the right, has been doing, because with Mikey Moore's going out to the left, Mikey Moore plays off the front a little bit. Does Hazard come in? There's a lot of players now, a lot of strength and depth now for Rangers, and Danny Rowe is adding when his team is playing well, when he's winning games, which everyone says is the right time to do it in a position of strength. So whoever comes into Rangers just now are getting into a team brimming with confidence, winning games, not losing many goals. So that should be an easier time to come into the game rather than coming in when the team's struggling a little bit, which was the case when Danny Rowe first came in. So I think the manager deserves an awful lot of credit the way he's turned things around at Rangers. His priority was winning games. That's what he said at the start. And he's been true to his word.
Well, thank you to Bobby. 0141 951 1025. More of your calls to come, and we'll set up a teaser for Jim and Cammy.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
About 20 minutes to go until kick-off between Falkirk and Celtic and Hearts and St Mirren. So we'll go back to both those grounds ahead of those games getting underway. But first, we have a teaser to get underway for you guys. Thanks to Adam and Larbert for this one. Nice and topical. Can you name the six players to make top flight appearances for both Falkirk and Celtic since 2005?
Falkirk and Celtic, 2005. Stephen Presley,
correct.
Scott Bain
is correct. Right, we'll leave that there because you've got two of six already, and we'll get more of those answers later on. We've been talking about the title race, we've been talking about transfers. Let's go back to Tynecastle, because one team that have been doing their transfer business pretty early, as expected, Steve Cowan, is Hearts. And I think the Hearts fans will probably feel pretty confident that the business they'll get done, even if they haven't really heard of the players or really know the teams they're coming from, they'll feel confident that the the players coming in will do Hearts a turn just based on their summer recruitment.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, you look at the people like Kizaridis, you know, Braga, they've come in and really done well. And I think, you know, the Jamestown's analytics and, you know, the system they've got for identifying players now, Andrew, is really, really good. So, and I think also they've got a great manager in Derek McInnes, and Jim will tell you, you know, having an eye for a player and seeing them even on video or any clips, you shouldn't get a feel for, you know, what's good there. Yeah, and I think they were looking to get the forward Rogers and Mato in as well there. So they're going to strengthen because they feel, they do feel as if they've got a chance to win the league. You know, you guys are obviously talking about Rangers and Celtic, and they've faltered for many reasons this season. So the Hearts team and management and supporters think they can do it there. Now, they're clearly going to have to get some people out, and one of the things I'd heard earlier on down in the press room was that Alan Forrest was maybe moving to Kilmarnock. He's not getting much of a game, so they're going to have to make space for some players. But yeah, I think there'll be one or two more players come in here at Tynecastle.
Steve, do you think that Hearts have missed a little bit of a trick by not having a bigger gap, you know, at this moment in time? I know that from Rangers that they've got a 3-point gap at the moment with this game tonight, but you know, I think with Celtic and Rangers having an unusually poor season, both of them, do you think this was the opportunity that maybe Hearts could have even extended? I'm sure that every Hearts fan would say, listen, mid-January would have been delighted to be that at the start of the season, but I'm just saying, as the season's unfolded, do you think there could have been a bigger gap?
I think it's a good point you make, Jim. I'm talking to other football-minded people as well, and they're saying, well, could it have been 9 points, 10 points, but you boys know that, you know, looking through a season, you're going to hit a sticky patch. And I was listening to one of the callers earlier, you know, worried about a lot of the second half performances from Hearts. But again, as you guys will know as well as me, you would take 38-1-0s and win the league, never mind about the performance. So yeah, I mean, they've still got a couple of Old Firm games against Rangers, two against Celtic, a couple of Edinburgh derbies. Do Aberdeen recover? Do they get a manager in and make, you know, start climbing the table? So they've got a lot of big games coming up ahead, and the cushion is not, which I agree with you, Jim, it's not where maybe it should be.
Yeah, I think people were quite interested in Hearts' recruitment in this window because they'd got themselves into such a strong position, whether, you know, that would trigger something and Tony Bloom would then throw loads of money at it this month and take that gamble that Hearts might win the league. But it's also just not the way that Hearts do business. It is all about, and Jamestown Analytics and Tony Bloom, it's not the way they do business. It's all about, you know, making the smart choices. And it kind of seems as if that's exactly the same as what they're going to do throughout this January window, rather than just sort of rip up the system that's worked for them at Brighton and at, you know, Union Saint-Gilloise.
Yeah, listen, they were never going to do that for me. I know he's got the money at his disposal to actually go and do it. But for me, certainly, it's been very successful since it's been brought into Hearts. I don't think they need to bring in too many players either. I think they've got a good squad as it is. Yes, they're obviously looking to improve it each window as it goes forward, but they've brought in some really good players. And what's happened with Hearts is the players that have came in have hit the ground running as well. Claudio Braga has been phenomenal for me. I love watching him as a player. I think he's a top, top player. He's scored goals. He's settled in really well. So I feel as if Hearts just need to keep going the way they're going. I think their business model with regards to the recruitment's excellent. They've got, as Steve said, a top manager in there as well, which makes all the difference for me. And they're in a good place. And look, you can get greedy. You can look and you can say, yes, we maybe should have got more points on the board. But I think they're in a really good place. And I think the last few weeks, they need to get over the line tonight. They absolutely need to do that, and they'll want to do that in style. They'll want to put on a performance. They'll want to win by X amount of goals. But I think the last few weeks, where it has been difficult, they'll have learnt a lot about themselves as a team.
I think that, you know, the only thing I would say, that part of the you know, the Jamestown analysis thing is obviously making they're a business, so they want to make money. So the likes of Kizaridis, Braga, they'll be players that they'll be looking to try and move on.
But they won't go in this window.
No, in the summer. So if they can, obviously, if they can get the title, that'd be amazing. But if they're looking to as a business, part of the reason why they're bringing in these other players just now is so there's not a gap. They're actually looking at perhaps moving players on, but having players already in the system, in the football club, working with Dana McInnes, understanding the way he wants to play, ready. So it's more of a seamless transition, and that'll be Nick's set of players. So it's a really, really good way of working, but it does take a couple of windows for it all to click in. In the meantime, you've got to be winning football matches, and that's exactly what Derek McInnes is doing just now. He is still winning football matches.
It's something I always looked at with Brighton, that all of a sudden in the middle of a season there would just be some random player that would go in, put in an unbelievable performance that no one had really heard much about. Everyone would be raving about him, and you'd actually look and he'd have been at Brighton for 3 or 4 years and they'd loaned him out. It's just the fact that they get in there and get the players earlier than other teams do. So as Jim says, it probably is about building the resources, building those players. I think Pierre-Landry Kabore came in, hasn't really played all that much, scored a couple of goals in one game. Chesnikov coming in. Did you see the story about Rogers Matto, who is the latest player that they've brought in, that Steve mentioned, that he's playing in the North Macedonian League. He's scored, I think, not far off a goal a game. Was actually at AFCON with Uganda, scored against Nigeria. Seems to have a good bit of pedigree. And because the team he's at in North Macedonia, Vardar, they're top of the table, I don't think we're expecting to win the league, essentially said, nope, we're not letting him go in this window for less than €1.5 million. And about 2 days later, Hearts then just signed him on a pre-contract because his deal was up. His deal is up in the summer. Then there was a strange complication today where Vardar came out and said that they'd accepted a bid from Sporting Kansas City, an MLS forum. I think that was then cleared up. I don't know whether they sort of panicked and then put that out, but essentially Sporting Kansas City have come out and said that that offer predated Hearts' pre-contract, so they just sort of wish him well for his time at Hearts. But if you're getting in there early, you know, Sporting Kansas City, MLS team that will have a decent budget as well. So Hearts are not only competing with these teams, but also kind of trumping them to the signings. That'll be a good...
It's great research homework, and that's their business. That is exactly what they do. As you say, they've got the experience with Union St Gilloise, and they've got that with Brighton, and it's a proven system that works. They understand it, and also where they pitch them, what level they get at, and when they're ready to go. As you said, Andrew, do they need to go out and loan? Do they need a year or two? They're not worried about that. They're looking at the kind of longer term plan. And Brighton have been unbelievably successful. The amount of money they've made is absolutely frightening, plus still being a very well established English Premiership club. So Hearts are challenging for the title. At the same token, they're bringing in players that the fans are really enjoying watching. They're entertaining, and they've got strength and depth, but they're not resting on their laurels. They're still looking at seeing how they can improve it, because if those players eventually do move, they've got, as you say, the next players that are ready to step up into their place without disrupting the club's development in terms of how they're progressing.
0141 951 1025. Maybe it is the transfer window that's taking your interest. Maybe it's tonight's games. We want to hear your opinions. 0141 951 1025. Let's hear from some of the managers involved in tonight's games. Let's start with Martin O'Neill.
We don't have any midweeks, so trying to implement a style or something, I guess, here might be a bit more difficult. Just wanted to revert back to what we were doing when I came in, first of all. But of course, there's loads of things we can improve on. You know, Falkirk game is big for us, big match for us, a team who's flying at the moment. And I thought that even when we won, which was my opening game of the last period I was in charge, I thought they were very strong.
And Falkirk boss John McGlynn.
Every time we play Celtic, they seem to be bang at it. We've always played them at Celtic Park, and this is the first time we're going to play Celtic at home. We've worked in the game for a long time and been at Hearts for a number of 11 years previously and all the rest of it. And your best chance is at home. Hopefully the wind machine's on, the Astro, that open terracing on the other side there. There's nothing there. Might just dampen them a little bit, and maybe we can cash in on that, yeah.
John McGlynn kind of touching on something that we mentioned earlier on, because if you are Falkirk and your budget is so much smaller than Celtic, you might play very attractive football and you might have had some brilliant results this season and having a great campaign. You still need other factors and things to go your way to help you get that, you know, those big wins.
100%. Again, you need everything to fall for you, everything to go for you. The wind, we spoke about, Jim mentioned it before, is the wind machine on? Is it the AstroTurf? Does that play into the advantage of the Falkirk players because they train there every day? So, yeah, listen, there's loads of elements to it that'll need to fall in Falkirk's favour, because Celtic are a very good team. They had a good result the weekend, so they'll be looking forward to the game tonight. They know how big the game is. And that's what I would say, is Martin O'Neill will be in that dressing room reiterating to these players how big a game this is for them, because this is a huge game. They need to go to Falkirk and win. It's not going to be easy, but they need to find a way to win. So, listen, Falkirk have been phenomenal this season. They've surprised a lot of people. I think a lot of pundits had them going down and thought they wouldn't have enough strength and depth within their squad. So I think a lot of it is down to John McGlynn as a manager. I think what he's done to the club, the way he's turned it around, the way he's improved the players as well and took the players on the journey from that League One all the way into the top flight and allowed them to go and express themselves and trusted these guys as well. I think he needs to take a huge amount of credit. So it's going to be an intriguing match tonight, because I think Falkirk could get a result, but it's one that Celtic absolutely need 3 points.
An interesting point of note on the Celtic bench: no Stephen Welsh, recalled from Motherwell. I know that, you know, he's had such a great season at Motherwell. Was it a case that he was coming back to be involved, or was it a case, you know, was he coming back and Celtic then need to look for cover and then he can go back out on loan? But Dane Murray gets the nod on the bench instead of Stephen Welsh. Does that tell you anything?
It doesn't really tell you anything, but I just feel that Martin O'Neill had said himself he wanted a little bit of cover, but he might go back to him, although it maybe suggests to me that they're trying to bring someone in and they're not 100% sure if that's going to get done. So therefore, while that's still negotiating, there's still some negotiations getting done in the background, we're going to just to make sure we get a wee bit extra cover. If it doesn't work out, Stephen Welsh may well stay. If they do get someone in, then they might say, okay, we've now got a centre back in, Stephen can go back to Motherwell and get continue his game with there, which he said the style of football and the success that they're having at Motherwell as well has been invaluable, and I'm sure Stephen Welsh is absolutely loving it and wanting to play. But ultimately he's contracted to Celtic, so yep, therefore he has to come back to Celtic at the moment. But I think that Celtic will bring someone in, and I think he will go back to Motherwell.
Right, more answers to get on this teaser. You can email yours to fulltime@clyde1.com. Can you name 6 players to make top flight appearances for both Falkirk and Celtic since 2005? You have Scott Bain and Stephen Presley.
Calvin Miller.
Calvin Miller is correct.
Casper Schmeichel.
Casper Schmeichel is correct. We'll get more answers and go back to the Falkirk Stadium next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Still a chance for you to get your calls in for Jim Duffy and Cammy Bell. 0141 951 1025 on the phones. Two big games in the Scottish Premiership tonight, so the league table could look a bit different tomorrow morning once those are over. It's Hearts against St Mirren at Tynecastle. A win for Hearts will put them a bit further ahead at the top of the table. And it's Falkirk against Celtic at the Falkirk Stadium. Not long to go until kickoff. Gabriel Anthony Atsi's there.
Yes, Andrew, you can hear the two teams walking out now, emerging from the tunnel here at a wet and windy Falkirk Stadium. And the last time Falkirk beat Celtic here, Casper Schmeichel was in goal for Falkirk. The two sides haven't played here for 14 years. Remarkable, really. Anthony Stokes scored twice in a 3-1 win for Celtic that day, but the club don't have a striker anywhere near his goal-scoring ability these days. Martin O'Neill insists they are searching the market, claims he's already dismissed a few players, but they're trying really hard before the window closes. They need at least a couple of players in, especially with Hearts and Rangers strengthening. It's a great atmosphere here. We've just had a light show, and you get the feeling these fans fancy this, and why not? They're in the top half. They've won 3 of their last 4. They rarely lose at home, and they know this Celtic team can be got at. Let's go through the starting lineups once more for you, starting with the hosts. One change for Falkirk. It's Bain in goal. Lissa, Alan Henderson and McCann is a back 4. Spencer Tate and Wilson in the middle of the park, with Yates and Miller behind Stewart. One change for Celtic as well, with Negrin coming in for Hitate in midfield. Schmeichel is in goal. Araujo, Trusty, Scales and Tierney are the back 4. Engels, McGregor and Negrin in the middle of the park. Yang, Maeda and Tunekti up top. The Celtic players just gathering in the centre of the park for their huddle moments before kickoff. Falkirk on the other side of the park, just going through their pre-match routine, Andrew. What a huge night this could be, both here and just over at Tyne Castle in Edinburgh, when it comes down to the title race. A three-way title fight. We've not seen it for many, many years in Scotland, and what a pivotal night it could be. A referee, John Beaton, is just placing the ball on the centre circle, and kickoff is moments away.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. And Hearts against St Mirren at Tyne Castle. We'll let you know if there are any updates in the opening minutes of those matches before we go off air. Not many to go on the teaser for you two, so I'll wait until the end of the show. I can see you deliberating. Gabriel saying there that the last time Falkirk beat Celtic at the Falkirk Stadium was 18th of March 2007, and Kasper Schmeichel was in goal for Falkirk. Whereabouts were you in your career in 2007? You just starting out 2007?
I genuinely don't know, to be honest. Not a clue.
It's about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Should we look that up?
Just see, I don't know what I was doing.
You're certainly not playing Premiership games anymore.
No, I wasn't. I can remember Kasper Schmeichel up Falkirk. Again, he had a really good spell. I think it was Man City came up from a right in saying that at the time. So, yeah, again, you kind of knew when you seen him, and obviously his father in the story with that, but you knew that he was going to go on and have a brilliant career.
How long ago does this feel to you, being on loan at Montrose in the Scottish Third Division? That's what you were doing that season.
That's how long ago it was that
Kasper Schmeichel was playing, you know, top flight football, but on the other side of it for Falkirk. It's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a long, long time ago. But as I say, very different for Kasper and the way his career went. But he's a brilliant goalkeeper. I know he's came in for a lot of stick this season, a lot of criticism, but I still think he is a fantastic goalkeeper. And listen, Celtic will just be hoping he can get back to his best.
Yeah, it's just a minute into the game between Falkirk and Celtic. As I said, we'll let you know what's happening in that game for the opening 10, 15 minutes or so before we go off air. Remember, the guys will be back tomorrow night as well between 6 and 8. We'll get all the reaction to tonight's matches. Looking forward to seeing how they both unfold. But just in the early stages, as you'd fully expect from a John McGlynn side, more than happy for his players to just take the ball in and pass it around the back and try and build forward.
Yeah, I mean, Falkirk will play their style. You know, they won't change because it's Celtic. They maybe sit off Celtic a little bit at times, but in terms of with the ball, they'll still look to link the play up and play the way they've done, as Cammy's mentioned there, for the last, 4 years or so under John. They're not going to just change that because it's Celtic. But, you know, Celtic are on, you know, that confidence is definitely flowing through Celtic again since Martin O'Neill's walked in the door. It should be a really open game, but I think we heard Gabriel Aaron saying it is swirling, it is windy. The pitch obviously can sometimes be a bit dry there, depending on the conditions. So it's certainly a test mentally for Celtic when you go to places like the Falkirk Stadium, you know, because you have to adapt to it.
I think Gabriel said that it had been raining, which will probably help the pitch for Celtic. Again, the ball will move quicker, it'll be slicker on that surface. And I think, to be honest, I think the new, they've relayed that over the last couple of seasons, so it is a better...
It's a good artificial surface, there's no doubt about it. It's one of the better ones, but it's still artificial nevertheless. Yep. And players, you know, we've seen it time and time again, players like, you know, from Celtic's perspective, they want grass. They don't really enjoy going in, even if it is a good surface.
Martin O'Neill would allow that as an excuse. So I think he's one of these managers that's the pitch, go and deal with it and go and win the game.
Yeah,
goalless in the two Premiership games in the opening 3 minutes. Just to touch on the other game, St Mirren travelling to Tyne Castle to play Hearts. After that League Cup win, it's really not been the season that Stephen Robinson would have wanted. He came out after the game at the weekend, the defeat to Falkirk. He was really quite angry, quite scathing. I then spoke to him yesterday. He sort of calmed down a bit. He was talking more about the fact that they do have bad injuries. They need to get some players in. As you'd expect, you know, the heat of the moment, some managers can maybe say some things that they don't want to in the press. But St Mirren really need to start...
I think the last two performances in particular have been really poor for St Mirren. I mean, the one thing you look at St Mirren, they're notoriously difficult to play against. You know, they're very well organised, they've got a great structure, they know their jobs, they play the 3-5-2, they get crosses in the box, but they've just, you know, all departments seems to have been, off the pace. And they need to get back to what they've been doing over the last, three seasons, the two seasons in the top six, which has been brilliant, winning the cup, But maybe that just that fact that they won the cup, the players just took their foot off the gas, and it's hard sometimes to get back up to speed again. And the other thing, they became a wee bit of a target for other clubs as well, because they are cup winners, so teams are getting into that and they're maybe giving them a bit more respect. St Mirren have to get back to what they've been good at over the last few years. Going to Tynecastle will be a massive test for them, but they need a big performance.
They do run with a small squad, and probably this period, you know, the festive period is busy anyway, but St Mirren are now playing a lot of midweek games because they had games postponed because they did so well in the League Cup. So they're maybe almost paying in the league for the fact that they did so well in the League Cup because they've had postponed games, and then they're playing, you know, weekend, midweek, which they maybe don't just have the squad to cope with, especially with the injuries they've got at the moment. And you look, Killian Phillips back in the starting lineup tonight, which Stephen Robinson will be delighted about, because he said something that I don't think I've ever heard before yesterday. He got a shoulder injury at the weekend, and he said they need to assess whether he needs surgery on it. He said if he needs surgery, he'll be out for 3 months. If he doesn't need surgery, he can play tomorrow night.
It's quite
a disparity between the two, isn't it?
Again, when you look at St Mirren, it is quite surprising. Yes, it's not ideal, they're going to have loads of midweek games, but they need to deal with that. They need to find a way to get back to winning ways. They're not scoring goals. That's been a huge problem for them, the lowest scorers in the league. And again, when you're making mistakes at the back, it's really costing you, because you've not got that firepower at the top end of the pitch. And it's quite surprising, because again, we've all known that Mandron chips in with goals. Killian Phillips, we all know he can score goals. So they do have goals in their team. It just seems to have dried up at this moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, they're a big side, a physical side. Even if they're not scoring an open play, you would expect to be scoring set plays. But, you know, they've been very, very good over the last couple of years. They've obviously had a sticky patch, but they just have to get back to it. I mean, I do think that they've got more than enough to get themselves on a little bit of a run. But there's a new manager in Kilmarnock, so whether Neil McCann can turn that around, he'll be looking to bring some players in the window. Dundee have improved, so other clubs, Aberdeen will be looking to bring a new manager in, so they should improve. So it's still a real, you know, it's going to be a real difficult period for St Mirren, but they have to just to get back to what they're good at, and I think Stevie Robinson has been a terrific manager. And I think you'll find the formula.
In the early stages at the Falkirk Stadium, most of the play has been happening in Falkirk's half, as you'd suspect, but maybe a chance for Falkirk to get in behind here, and the shot maybe been taken a bit early there. Could he maybe have tried to shoot?
Yeah, I think he should have went in and taken maybe another touch. I know the angle was difficult, but if he can't score, he might have allowed one of his teammates to try and get himself alongside them to see if he could pick someone out. But again, it shows you that Falkirk are not just going to sit back and invite pressure. They are, when they get opportunities, they're going to take a risk and try and play forward.
Yeah, a good story for Barney Stewart as well, starting this game. Was playing university football not that long ago for Heriot Watt Uni, and was then picked up by Falkirk. And it shows it's just part of the recruitment that they've managed to pick up players from different places, guys that have been there since League One.
Yeah, Caitlin Adams is another one. Yeah. I think they brought in from Stirling, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. He's not adverse to taking the risk, John. And you know, don't get me wrong, Barney Stewart went to Dunfermline, did well. I think he scored about 8 goals in 15 games or something like that. He maybe needed that to get in and get himself a bit of confidence. But they've got the likes of Brian Graham there. They've got Ross McKeever. So they do have a physical presence up front. And you know, Calvin Miller's been, kind of, I think tonight he's playing a little bit more back to being wider again, but he's been playing off the front as well. He's a player, I think, that if he's got to be in maybe the thoughts of like Steve Clark, because we don't have a lot of wingers, you know, that can go there. Calvin Miller, and as you mentioned, Brad Spencer's like a difficult one, because Scotland are so strong in there. But in terms of actually quality, they've definitely got players with real ability.
What John McGlynn does, though, he improves players. Mm-hmm. He improves players, and he's done that, and that's why it'll be a joy for all these players, as you mentioned, Barney Stewart there, mm-hmm. coming into a club like Falkirk, knowing that a manager's going to improve you as a footballer. And again, they thrive on that. Again, Brad Spencer had a short period with him at Kilmarnock. He didn't really get a look in, then obviously had to go to Raith Rovers to try and get his career up and running. Done well, and he thrives under John McGlynn as a manager. So I just look at John McGlynn, I think he really does improve young players.
We talked about the lack of Stephen Welsh on the bench. No Balakwisha either, back from the African Cup of Nations, nowhere to be seen. Is that maybe just a sort of damning indictment of where his Celtic career's at the moment.
It's a difficult one because you don't know. Listen, he's came back there. Maybe he just needs a little bit of time to recover. You know, who knows, Andrew? But he's one of these ones. Not everyone just comes into Scottish football and flies straight away. Sometimes a player takes 6 months. We spoke about Nicholas Cooney earlier on. He didn't hit the ground running for the first few months. So you need to give guys time. At this moment in time, he hasn't worked out for him. There's no doubt about it. There's no shying away from that. But he does need time, and it'll be interesting to see whether he can justify that big transfer fee.
Final bit of work to do on this teaser. Can you name the 6 players to make top flight appearances for both Falkirk and Celtic since 2005? You've got Scott Bain, Casper Schmeichel, Calvin Miller and Stephen Presley.
I've got a couple here. Anthony Stokes.
Correct.
And I've got, I don't know if he played in the first, but Aidan Nisbet?
No, he didn't play a top flight game for Celtic. Not long to go, he made 300 odd appearances for Celtic. Well, between 95 and 2005.
I've got a player here, but again, it's just time-wise.
JM are the initials, very quickly.
I've got John Hughes.
It's Jackie McNamara. Jackie McNamara. We will get the reaction to tonight's games tomorrow. It's Callum Gallagher that's up next.